Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. I want to thank everyone over the past few months that have given just terrific feedback for this podcast. And this is something that I've been wanting to do for a little while, but kind of been wondering how I would go about really formatting these episodes, what I wanted to focus on, the type of guests that I wanted to have on. And your guys' feedback has just been absolutely awesome. So I appreciate that. If you've been listening to it regularly and enjoy it, I do encourage you to, you know, rate and review it on iTunes. Your feedback is very important. So please do that. Please continue to do that. Now today, what we're going to do is something a little bit different. It's going to be a solo effort. And that's because I've had spent a lot of time in this past month and a half to 6 weeks watching tape. I've been really busy, and this is a busy part of the season. And I didn't really want to ask anybody on, at least for this week. I've got a couple of guests that I want to have in store over the next couple of weeks. But I just wanted to talk ball based on things that I've seen. And I'm going to do more of these solo episodes probably during the season, especially as we get into, you know, the NFL season, and I'm watching a lot of college tape, but also studying, you know, numerous NFL games on Sunday from, you know, this time of night, usually, because I usually stay up all night to study the games for the top 10 at footballguys.com, where I provide a lot of tape analysis in my column and give people an idea about things about scheme and players and how players are developing and things like that. So let's start with an overrated, underrated feature. And the overrated, underrated topic today is going to be training camp and preseason analysis, because there's a ton of it on Twitter. There's a ton of it on the internet everywhere. And what makes good analysis for those types of things? Now, I'm going to probably do this with a broad brush. So there are going to be exceptions to the rules here that I'm laying out. And there are going to be times that you're going to see value from the things I say that are overrated. And sometimes the things that I think are underrated may not have as much value as I'm stating at this point. Individual circumstances vary. But with that in mind, one of the first things that I think is fairly overrated when we're talking about preseason is when people are citing one-on-one drills as for a positive about a player, you know, whether it's a receiver running a route or a pass pro drill or, you know, a pass rusher against an offensive lineman. Some of these drills are more like teaching to the test, or they're slanted in a way where one player is, you know, on either side of the ball is going to have a little bit more of an inherent edge. You know, receivers on one-on-one against defensive players are going to have a little bit more of a one-on-one advantage in those situations. We see it all the time in the Senior Bowl, because really there's not a time limit usually for when the quarterback can throw the ball. So a receiver can tell a very elaborate story with his route running that he won't normally be able to do out on the field in a game situation. It's kind of like playing one-on-one basketball, where you can display a whole bunch of playground like moves, but you're not going to get away with that when you're playing 5-on-5. So I would just say take that a little bit with a grain of salt. You can study and admire some of the athletic skills there that are on display with these players, and then some of the things that they can do with routes when they're executed extremely well. But you're still looking for efficiency with the movement. You're still looking for the ability to, you know, in situations where maybe it's a more realistic looking route. You know, if they're getting a chance to break open to the inside and the defender is playing an outside shade and the receiver can break open to a wide open middle, it doesn't matter how many nice moves he made if the defender is basically giving him the middle and it's empty in a one-on-one drill. So if you understand what I'm saying there, you've got to really look at the position of the defender, and you have to look at, you know, how the receiver runs these routes and make sure that you're not overrating some of that. And the same goes with, you know, these defensive drills and blocking, especially blocking, because man, when you watch a running back in a blocking drill, usually he's only facing a linebacker or a safety, someone that's about his size or a little bit bigger. He usually doesn't have to diagnose anything. The linebacker's coming in a certain angle and he's able to pick that up. And all he has to do is square punch and move his feet. And sometimes that's hard enough for these guys. But the diagnostic aspect isn't there. He's not having to read which player he's supposed to pick up or if the defense shifts, whether that changes his assignment or whether he's communicating well with his linemen. And so that's why when you hear coaches or you hear beat reporters say the running back did really well in pass pro drills, and then you find out that the pass pro drill was a one-on-one, it's an incomplete drill and it doesn't really teach you enough to really see how good they are. And often that gives coaches a false indicator as well, and or at least an incomplete indicator, until they watch that player in preseason action, in game situations, and see if he can pick up the pressure at that point and get the right angles and be able to deliver a punch or know when to cut and know when to actually deliver stand up. Can he handle bigger defenders? Does he figure out a way to be able to address that? So those are things that you want to think about when it comes to one-on-one drills and why they can be overrated. I'd say catch and run plays in open space in the preseason, extremely overrated. You know, it's one thing to watch a receiver be able to, you know, take a ball and be able to work through tackles, make people miss and get in the open field, and you're going to get to see things that probably he displayed in college. So, you know, the teams already know this about that player. Fans, if they watch college football, probably already know this about the player. You know, what you want to see is route running. You want to see him catch after with contact or in tight coverage. You want to see him release from the line against press coverage. Watching somebody like, I mean, a good example would be Traquan Smith. Watching Traquan Smith run screen passes and be able to get yards after the catch with that doesn't tell anybody anything new about him, and it doesn't tell us anything about whether he's developed enough to be the route runner that he would need to be in the New Orleans Saints offense as a starter one day. Will that happen? Very well could, but watching that kind of athletic ability is just like saying water's wet. We know that most of the guys who are drafted to be in the NFL, if they're just displaying their athletic ability, it's just a water is wet kind of proposition. And so when you see guys maybe who are deep threats, Taywan Taylor is another example. He's a good young receiver, don't get me wrong. But, you know, if you watch him catch a ball, he beats a defender, and then he takes it, you know, 60, 70 yards to the house, and there's nobody around, what does that really tell you? Nothing. Nothing more than what you already should have seen if you watch it. So don't get too impressed by that stuff. I would say the same goes in a related way as attributing good play to wide receivers and running backs instead of their offensive line and blockers. There are situations where you see guys get big creases and they're able to run through them in a straight line for 8 to 10 to 15 yards before they even have to make any type of move. They didn't have to manipulate anything at the line of scrimmage. That's doing what you're supposed to do. So you want to keep an eye out for that. At the same time too, I mean, there's a fair bit of fans that still have to learn how offensive lines work. You know, just how, what the play designs are. What does a zone scheme look like? You know, what is an outside zone? What does an inside zone look like? How do they block that? What is the back's options? What does an off-tackle zone look like? What does an ISO play look like? Or, a power play or a trap play? These are types of things that if you can learn those basic plays and be able to, like, even if you could just, if you want to spend a half hour diagramming them on a napkin while you're getting something to eat lunch hour and learn how to diagram those plays, and you do that daily for, I don't know, a couple of weeks or a month, you're going to learn a lot more about what the running plays look like, and recognize what a runner's supposed to do and not supposed to do in those situations. And you'll get a better feel for also when the runner does a better job than his offensive line, or when a offensive line does a better job for the runner, or whether it's kind of equal parts, both the running back and that offensive line unit. Another thing I would say is reckless decisions, successful plays based on reckless decisions. It's one thing to, you know, be complimentary to a receiver who catches a football, you know, through, you know, multiple defenders who are converging on him. That's a nice play. That's notable for the receiver. But if the quarterback is falling backwards and throwing it up for grabs, and he may have avoided multiple defenders, but that's not a good play. That's a reckless decision. A good example of that I just described was actually a play that Jameis Winston made with Chris Godwin against the Titans this weekend. You know, and he did a really nice job of avoiding pressure, but then he did what he's often done, which is been reckless, trying to throw the ball into the end zone, trying to make a hero play. And that's still something that he has a tendency to do, and it's going to have to be broken in. It's going to have to be broken a little bit more. He's still doing it at this stage of his career. He's had some nice moments during the preseason, but again, you know, these are some things that you want to make sure that you're keeping in context. Some underrated things: mature decision-making. Doesn't matter whether the player gains a lot of yards or doesn't make or drops a, you know, doesn't get the catch because he's not able to, the ball isn't accurate or not. Or a receiver drops the ball and the quarterback makes some good decisions. You want to look at the process, and the process is, again, about successful decision-making, mature decisions. You know, some good examples of that were Nick Chubb in the first week. He made some very mature decisions, despite the fact that he didn't have really good blocking in front of him. And you can see the very next week he had better blocking against the Buffalo Bills, and you could see him again setting up those blocks the way that he needed to and getting yards after contact, making people miss. And that gives you a little bit more of an understanding that when you look at the process of what a player does, the outcome isn't quite as important when you're studying the talent of the player. Not whether he's a good fantasy player or not. Not whether he's going to score a lot of points for you this year. That's something that obviously you want to look at. If you're, you know, if you're a fantasy owner, that's great. You want to know that information. But the baseline thing that you need to know is whether the player is capable of doing that when he has the proper surrounding talent and good situation around him where he's going to be given that good opportunity. Because a talented player given a good opportunity is going to make the most of it. A player who isn't that talented, but given a good opportunity, will make something out of it oftentimes, but not as much as a better talent. And sometimes there are good talents who just aren't going to get those opportunities, and they're going to get overshadowed, or they're going to be struggling kind of, you know, away from the spotlight to get those chances because there's somebody else with a bigger contract or more existing talent or more tenure at that point. So, you know, part of that is about being patient. And then, of course, successful reps in 11-on-11 game situations. You know, whether it's a preseason game or whether it's an 11-on-11 scrimmage, those are the plays that you really want to take note of because you're getting the greatest level of simulation of real game action than of what you're going to be able to see. So when you see tapes of that, that's very valuable. Let's move on and talk a little bit about a player who may be coming back into the league again, and that's Adrian Peterson. He's apparently looking or getting a look by Washington after Darius Geis got injured. And, you know, I think the party line with Adrian Peterson was he wasn't very good last year and he wasn't good with the Vikings. And, you know, how much does he really have left? And I watched a lot of Adrian Peterson over the past few years, including last year. And after studying him with Arizona, I can tell you that he still has the skills to be an every down back in an offensive system that Washington would have no problem running. You know, allowing him to run gap-oriented plays, some zone-oriented plays, running from an I formation, giving him to work from a single back set where he can get downhill and be that guy who gets, you know, 15, 18, 20 touches on a consistent basis. He's that kind of back, and he's always been that kind of back. And when Arizona, for a brief period of time, had a healthy offensive line, when they got all their guys back, around, I think, the second month of the season, Adrian Peterson looked very good when he was getting the number of carries he needed and the line was healthy. And you could see the quickness was there. The short area quickness was terrific. You could see him making strong cuts. He didn't have any problem patiently pressing the crease and cutting back. The power was still there. The balance, everything was there except for the long speed. So if you're looking for Adrian Peterson, you know, circa Vikings, where he was breaking 60, 70 yard runs when he got into the second level, that's not there anymore. Not with the frequency that you would have expected with him in his prime. But what's still there is the ability to get 6, 8, 10, 12, 15 yard gains and to get them repeatedly as the game wears on. And he's that type of back that, you know, you want him hitting the hole and being able to push the pile and have the linemen lean on other defenders and push them to the ground and knock them to the ground. And as defenders have to keep getting up and getting knocked to the ground, they get tired. They don't like getting hit. They don't like getting hit any more than offensive players getting hit. So when the offensive players can have the advantage to work downhill and hit those defenders first, those guys get tired. They get less aggressive. They make mistakes. They lose discipline. And Adrian Peterson's that type of player. Now, I know that's, you know, in some circles, that's old-fashioned football and outdated football. But it would have worked with the Arizona Cardinals if they could have had a healthy enough line to sustain that. And they just couldn't do that last year. But in the moments, in the couple of weeks where Peterson got to run with that kind of volume, he performed well. So it's something that you want to keep an eye out for, because if Washington embraces that, maybe he gets an opportunity to showcase that for one more year. And, you know, I don't have any doubts about the basic skills that he has to be a solid runner. It's in the same way. He would be an upgrade in terms of physical skills. He's still a better physical specimen than Frank Gore has been. He's probably a better physical specimen in some regards to what Peyton Barber or Spencer Ware has been in certain areas. Is he going to be a long speed guy? No. So just keep an eye out for that. If he does get signed, you still want to monitor that situation. If you're a fantasy owner, or if you're just a fan, I wouldn't write him off just yet. So let's talk about some players now who we haven't really heard a lot from on the big stage yet in the NFL. But I think, you know, 1 to 2 years of patience would be good. And then there are a couple guys maybe on this list who, you know, might be able to do something now. So kind of we'll call it a now and later kind of thing after the candy here. We're going to look at quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. And then I think we'll wrap this up maybe with a look at a few college players or some discussion about a few college players here. First, let's talk about some quarterbacks here, guys who I think that could contribute now if needed. You know, right off the bat, Teddy Bridgewater, after watching him, you know, in Minnesota, Louisville, and now with the Jets, if you study the game in the way that I mentioned, it's not so much about the quality of the defense you face in terms of is it second team or third team or first team. It's really about the quality of reps that you see. And so when you watch Bridgewater having to avoid pressure up the middle and being able to reset and fire a ball accurately, or to being able to manipulate a defense with really strong techniques that would normally work against top defenders, because it's just about how crisp and precise you are, being able to turn that shoulder, or being able to avoid pressure slide and find that second or third window of a route. Teddy Bridgewater has shown all of that. And I was really impressed by the New York Jets matchup that he had with Washington, where he did a nice job of being able to make some play changes. He made some really nice audibles, where I remember one specifically where I believe they were either called out of a run or he changed the direction of the play because he saw that there was going to be a blitz from a linebacker coming off the strong side. And what he ended up doing is he checked that play. He audibled it and ended up going to a bootleg pass to that blitzing side and ended up rolling out to the right, throwing to the tight end who was wide open in the flat and got a strong gain out of this because he recognized that there wouldn't be anyone covering that tight end to the flat. And it's his skill being able to find open players underneath and to be able to deliver the ball and change plays that he said that he's worked on. And you can see some of that, that he's just recognizing things a little faster. He's a little calmer at the line of scrimmage in terms of being able to, you know, get in and out of plays. And that's an essential part of high level management of, you know, of the game as a quarterback. And, you know, I saw some criticism about whether he could throw deep or not. And that's always been kind of an issue with his game, that he wasn't pinpoint in the deep game. But I saw some nice intermediate plays that were kind of on the deeper side, you know, in that 20 to 30 yard range. And he was pinpoint. There was one that he threw that was a very difficult target to Chad Hansen on a corner route that Hansen probably should have caught. It just went through his fingertips. It was about as close as you can get to being exactly where it needed to be without the receiver catching it. So, you know, he's making those throws. He looks agile. He looks like the same old Teddy that I remember watching. And I really wouldn't be surprised if he ends up playing for another team sooner than later. I mean, there are some teams that really could benefit from trading for him. And I would probably say that the Saints would be terrific fit for him. I think that the Jaguars could benefit from him, but they're going to stick with Blake Bortles. Miami could benefit, but they're probably going to be stubborn about sticking with Ryan Tannehill. You know, the Chargers, with Phillip Rivers getting older, they could certainly use a player. And, you know, Cardale Jones is probably, there's been talk that he might beat out Geno Smith for that job. And he's an interesting guy I'd like to see a little bit more from. But again, Bridgewater would be a good, you know, starter in waiting behind Phillip Rivers. That would be a really nice, you know, look for him. You know, and there's even been talk about maybe Denver, you know, they're not completely sold on Chad Kelly. And that does bring me to him as an option to consider as far as where is he at? Because I know, you know, I've certainly been very positive about Chad Kelly's potential on the field. And the biggest question marks I've had from him haven't been his on-field play, but really about whether or not he's going to be mature and off the field. And so far, I mean, what we've heard from my buddy Cecil Lammy is that he's, you know, all year he's been mature. All last year, he's been very good about, you know, keeping his nose in the playbook and working really hard. He doesn't go out with his teammates and party. He doesn't go out to nightclubs or bars. He just goes home and then he comes to the facility and works. And that tells you that this is someone who's really, really hyper competitive, as they said that he was. It wasn't just some, you know, puff piece talk and you know, in on sports pages when, you know, they're playing up some local guy. This is someone who's actually been working very hard and it's showing. You know, he lost the weight that he needed to lose. You see it on the field. He's been making good reads of the field. When he's made mistakes, he's done a good job of being able to just bounce back and continue to play aggressive. You see the arm, you see the confidence. When he sees something that is, you know, time to make that decision, there's really no hesitation to his game, which is something that I've always loved about his play. So are the Broncos going to stick with him? I think that they're not confident enough in him yet to do that. And I think that the reason being is this is essentially his first year. I mean, last year was really more of a, can he get healthy? Can he get healthy and can he behave? And the answers were yes on both. And now it's about is he going to perform well and be a mature guy now that he's going to be in game situations, now that he's going to have some notoriety around town, now that he's going to, you know, have some success and the Broncos fans have booed Paxton Lynch off the field. a couple of times and have been very, very supportive of Chad Kelly. How's he going to react to that? Is he going to get arrogant off the field and behave poorly and start going out? You know, they have good reasons to have questions about that. So they're going to give, I think they're going to give him that time, and they're hoping that maybe what can happen is maybe they'll find a veteran quarterback to be in that room as well and be behind Case Keenum and make Chad Kelly work for it a little bit more and see if he's determined enough and see if he makes that extra level of improvement between this year and next. And if he does, I wouldn't be surprised if he's the number two quarterback by next year and their heir apparent. So it's a series of steps. I think a lot of people want me to say to them, he's going to be the starter. He's going to be the starter in Denver by 2019. And it's possible. It's very possible. If Case Keenum gets hurt, if he underperforms, Chad Kelly might come in there and show that nothing's too big for him. And I don't think that it will be too big for him. But I think that the Broncos are taking an ultra conservative path with him. And they want to give it a step-by-step thing because they don't want it to be too big for him. And I think that their fear is that he's someone that would self-destruct if they don't take it step by step, and they want him to prove everything every step of the way. So he's a guy that I would definitely be patient with, same way that I'd be patient with Bridgewater, because I think both those guys will be starters in the league. Another guy that I'd be patient with is Kyle Lauletta, Giants quarterback, watching a little bit of his play in the preseason. You see the mobility, you see the quiet feet, you see his ability to reset and find a receiver downfield. I think that as he's gotten more comfortable, he's looking like the type of prospect that could develop into a top tier backup in the league, if not maybe even a good starter at some point. But he's someone that, he's another guy that I would look at is, let's look at him later and see how that goes. Now let's get to some running backs. A guy that I wouldn't give up on just yet is Kenneth Dixon. Now I know that a lot of people, Alex Collins has looked terrific, and Kenneth Dixon may not end up in Baltimore or end up staying in Baltimore, but he's healthy enough now that he's going to get a chance to perform probably tonight against Indianapolis Colts. If you're listening to this, I'm recording this, early Monday morning. We'll see if, we'll see if he gets some playing time. But, it looked like he was going to be in contention for the starting job and maybe at least to split that role with Collins. But now Collins has pretty much locked that thing up. And because Dixon had a substance abuse issue, he had a performance enhancement issue, he had injuries, this is a guy that really looked like he would be the next starter for the Ravens. Even when you look at, some of his on-field play, powerful back with good balance, runs hard, good burst, catches the ball extremely well, but just, a combination of bad decisions on his end and just circumstances that can happen that affect your opportunity. And so he may have to earn an opportunity somewhere else, but I could see him in a situation where, there's some teams that could use better running back talent. I mean, I like Justin Jackson, and I think Austin Eckler's played well, but imagine him in San Diego. I think it could be a really good fit if he's ready. Houston may be stubborn about Donta Foreman and him being able to come back, but if he doesn't show what he needs to show, all that, they don't really have much behind Lamar Miller. And Alfred Blue is a solid team player who's a good reserve NFL back, but he's not a starter in terms of what you're looking for physically or from a creative standpoint. Kenneth Dixon can do that, and that would be a really good fit for him as well, would be Houston's Houston's run game. He would be quite a versatile find for them. So those are two teams right away that I could see, willing to pick up and give Dixon a chance if he doesn't really solidify his role late in August with the small chances that he has. And because the talent's still there and he's young enough that, teams may not wait till the draft. They may hold on to him and see, and he could work his way, you know, into a position where he can be the starter. Rock Thomas really surprised me. The back with the Minnesota Vikings, I really didn't see much from him that I was impressed with at Jacksonville State, but he ran really hard. And when I watched him against the Broncos, he looked a lot more decisive and smooth. He seemed to display better pad level. His ball security was better. His cuts were crisp. He just looked like a more refined player. And I wonder whether, you know, I can't tell you why I think that's different between now and then. I can only guess, you know, and my guess would be that maybe playing at Jacksonville State instead of Auburn, he was a little more conservative or a little more careful in certain circumstances. And as a result, that the effort didn't look as high. And then maybe some of the things that he did were a little sloppier than what you would see from him if he were on a bigger stage. And the reason that I say that is I had that similar experience watching Isaiah Crowell. For those of you who may not have been following the RSP back then, Isaiah Crowell was one of my top backs. He might have been the number one back in that draft class for me. And when you look back on it, that's not such a big stretch, even though he went undrafted. And I knew he would probably go undrafted because after he got kicked out by the University of Georgia, he went to, I think it was Alabama State. I'm trying to remember, South Alabama, where he went to school. When he went there to that program, he often ran out of bounds. Reggie Barlow, the former Jacksonville back who was their coach, talked to Crowell all the time about what kind of effort he was going to have to give in the NFL. And he told the media about Crowell not always, you know, taking himself out of games and running out of bounds and that he would have to learn how to play special teams. And I looked at that and I understood what the coach was thinking, but I also understood Crowell's point of view. If you're in the college game and you ended up having to play for a small school, you want to be healthy enough for the combine. You don't want to have any major injuries because you're going to have to impress at the combine and be healthy enough to get into a camp and play well. If you're not healthy enough for those two things, it's unlikely that you're not only not going to get drafted, but you might not even get an opportunity during your tryout. And he nearly almost never had a shot in Cleveland. And because of the fact that Deion Lewis was the number one back at that time, and if it wasn't for Deion Lewis getting hurt, Isaiah Crowell doesn't come in the fourth quarter of a, you know, third preseason game against the Bears and light it up to the point that he ended up becoming a co-starter in his first season because the talent was there, but he wasn't getting enough reps for anyone to even recognize him. But he had to be healthy for that, and I think that he made a very pragmatic decision that wasn't the one that I think is popular among coaches, but you have to understand that he's trying to get, he knew he had NFL talent. I mean, this was a five-star recruit at the University of Georgia who had a terrific first season. I mean, this was supposed to be, he was the first of the line of, you know, the resurgence of Georgia backs. I mean, you had Crowell and Todd Gurley and Keith Marshall and Nick Chubb and Sony Michel, and now you have DeAndre Smith, Swift, and you have a few, you know, Holyfield and Elijah Holyfield, and you have a few others. He was the start of that. People think of Todd Gurley, but Isaiah Crowell was the start of that. And to go from that situation to being at a small school, he knew that, you know, the only way I had to get a chance was to be healthy, and he made a business decision. And, you know, from a team standpoint, that's not great. But from the realistic standpoint of how college football is and really what he was trying to do, I get it, you know, even if people don't agree. And I think that that's kind of the same thing that you see with a player like maybe Rock Thomas did the same. Let's talk about Ryan Nall. Ryan Nall is another one that I think that down the line, he's going to get a chance somewhere down the line. And that either happens because Jordan Howard gets hurt. I mean, Howard is a punishing back. I'm not going to predict injury for you, but I mean, you look at the fact that last year he played with a pretty bad shoulder injury that he had to be helped up repeatedly throughout games after he took hard shots. I mean, he was a warrior, and that's the ultimate compliment that you can give a player. But you know, that's his game. And if he's gonna, if we see him suffer more shoulder injuries, or that his hard running style creates any types of issues, we could wind up seeing Ryan Nall in the game as that, you know, two down back, and he has three down ability. So he's a guy that could fit well within this Bears offense as a pretty cheap alternative. Another guy I'd look at later, Justin Davis. Justin Davis is one of those backs that when I scouted him at USC, he was tall, he was light, he was extremely quick, not very fast, but he's a slashing runner. He can cut back really well, and he sets up creases well, and his burst is so good. And what was interesting is I remember writing down that if he could add a little bit of weight to his frame, if he could be about 20 pounds heavier than what he was at USC, he could and maintain that explosive first step and change of direction, he could be really impressive, and he could have an NFL career. And what he ended up doing when he got drafted by the Rams was add 20 pounds of muscle between his college season and the NFL. And this year he's looked pretty good in camp, and you can see that he, you know, he's impressed Sean McVay. You know, people have talked about John Kelly, and John Kelly is a terrific talent, and I love what John Kelly brings to the table. But when he talked about the idea of what would happen if Todd Gurley were to get hurt, the idea was Justin Davis and John Kelly. It wasn't John Kelly by himself. And I think that's because Davis showed enough as a slasher, and he sees these guys as complementary in what they have to offer. But I would also just kind of keep your ear to the ground about Justin Davis, because from what I saw of him, when you have that extra muscle to your frame, it makes you a little bit harder to bring down and to wrap up, and when, especially when you maintain that level of burst that he's shown. So Kenneth Dixon, Rock Thomas, Ryan Nall, Justin Davis. Those are guys that I just kind of, you know, I'm not telling you that, you know, that Thomas, Nall, or Davis are ever going to be starters. I think Nall has a chance. I think Davis has a kind of a more of a long shot. Rock Thomas strikes me more as a scat back. But those three, I think, are interesting just to kind of remember their names. And Kenneth Dixon, like Bridgewater, like Chad Kelly, I think he'll get, those three guys will get chances to be starters at their respective positions. Let's move on to wide receivers. DeMarcus Robinson. Not a lot of talk about him outside Kansas City, but the guy has just been making play after play in camp, high pointing the ball, getting deep, being able to win the ball between two defenders. This is a strong, lanky receiver who has good quickness, some decent speed, and he's got red zone ability. And when you think about the Chiefs and what Patrick Mahomes did against Atlanta, that 69-yard throw, it's not so much about the arm strength purely. It's also about the fact that receivers can make one break, not come open, and then run to an open spot, and Mahomes can buy time and throw the guy open the way Cam Newton can, the way that Ben Roethlisberger can, the way Brett Favre could. Plays don't end as easily with Patrick Mahomes. And the fact that he has the arm to be able to throw the ball over the head of the defense that lets a receiver buy him and make them pay, that forces defenses to play deeper, and that helps the run game. That also helps the underneath passing game. It's just an inherent advantage, because when you know as a defender that you've got to be aware of the deepest ranges of the field on any given play, it forces them to play more honest. And Robinson is a starter. He's going to be the third receiver in that group. Don't be surprised with him and Travis Kelce and Sammy Watkins, that these are three players, and you can even throw Chris Conley in there. These are really four receivers who, when they've worked with Alex Smith, weren't recipients of back shoulder fades or corner fades or any type of 50-50 throw that was by design, because Alex Smith doesn't throw those a lot, but Patrick Mahomes does. So keep that in mind, because Robinson could have a much better season right now than people understand. He's kind of surprising. And I think a guy who could be a mild surprise, maybe not a highly, highly productive starter, but one that I think will be a contributor, if not a starter, with some steady, with some good moments throughout the year and maybe some steady production, doesn't, in certain phases of the field. I think that's Grambling's Chad Williams with Arizona. Watching him, you know, this week, you can see the physicality, being able to work off a contact, catch balls when he's getting hit, being able to break tackles. This is a big, strong receiver with 4.3 speed. He's just been a little bit raw, but I watched him at the Senior Bowl. I watched him at Grambling, and I was really impressed with the raw skill that he had, and you could see that he was heading in the right direction. He reminded me of kind of a raw Dez Bryant who could hopefully learn the full route tree. And watching, I'm interested to see how he performs in the red zone this year, because again, with Larry Fitzgerald, you know, in tow, he's probably going to be the recipient of some of those jump balls. Same with a guy like the wide receiver I'm trying to think of that's converted to tight end from A&M, who I can't remember his name right off the bat. But he's the H-back for the Cardinals. Same type of thing, jump ball type of player as well, capable of doing that. But Chad Williams has a lot of that to his game as well. I would keep an eye out for that. Guys that I would also look at later who haven't really done a lot and are probably either on the bubble for their roster or where they'll be looking for new teams are Justin Watson with the Buccaneers. You know, it seems like one week they're talking about how he's as physical as Mike Evans, even though he's not quite as big. He's big enough that you realize that he can play and stack up in that fashion and play some strong ball that way and rebound. But he's also a good route runner who's getting better. But he's been inconsistent. So if, you know, with a stacked Buccaneers receiving core, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with him, because I think he'll get picked up by another team pretty quickly if he ends up getting cut. I don't think he'll pass through waivers and wind up on their practice squad. But he's a guy that I'd keep an eye on. Probably one of my favorite late round guys is T.O. Redding. Redding reminds me of Marvin Jones. And when I first saw him, he looked exactly like him. Watching him at Bowling Green, well, not exactly, but very close, very long, lithe, fluid, could really win the ball in the air, was a good vertical player with boundary awareness, tight coverage didn't bother him, he could make the first man miss, broke tackles, good open field player, and then he ends up in Detroit, and I thought, wow, what a great fit, because he is stylistically like Jones, and he's been working with Jones, and he's impressed in camp, and I think he's impressed enough that he may make this roster. He's very close to doing it, and so he's a guy that nobody's really talking about outside of what's happening in the Detroit area, but he's someone that you may want to just remember in a year or two. His name may become a little bit more well-known. Tight ends, guys right now, Jacob Hollister, Wyoming H-back. Watching him run some routes, he looked very smooth. I think that he understands how to manipulate defenders in coverage very well. I can see why the New England Patriots beat writers are talking about him possibly subbing for Julian Edelman and becoming a factor this year. And so he's someone that you definitely want to keep an eye out for, especially if they want to go with more two tight end sets and run the ball, because he can be an effective H-back for them. I have to see a little bit more with his blocking game, but I do think that the way that they've got this set up, you just want to see whether or not he can play on the big enough stage. And maybe what's going to happen here is he worked with Tom Brady in the second quarter of the Eagles game. He's been working with him, you know, during 11-on-11s a fair bit. So he's getting those opportunities. I think they're going to ease him in onto the big stage and see how he does. And if he continues performing well, don't be surprised if they continue to use him more and more as the season goes along. Eric Saubert with the Atlanta Falcons, he's a later. He's a guy that he's just been making terrific catches in camp. He's a natural receiver. He has some cases of dropping the football, but thus far he hasn't really done that in camp. He's caught everything. And the Falcons have done a great job this year of working, you know, in team and really player led sessions after practice to work on routes in the red zone. And I think they're really going to improve this year as a team in the red zone, especially in the passing game, which I think is going to make Matt Ryan a little bit underrated in the year statistically in the way people are looking at him. And you can see how Saubert, I think, is going to have an opportunity maybe, especially in run sets, to be that second tight end and make some big plays down the field. But, you know, he's a guy that I think will have a future for this team down the line, even though I really like Austin Hooper and I think he's going to have a good year. Saubert might end up being a free agent somewhere else. Another later guy who's kind of on the bubble is Seathan Carter. I really liked him out of Nebraska, and just watching him again with the Bengals, you know, Bengals beat writers comment about his athletic ability, and you can see it when he catches the ball. He has the burst and size to get downfield, really good acceleration. They're just kind of, they just have two really good all around tight ends in Tyler Eifert and Tyler Croft, and Uzoma has played pretty well too, CJ Uzoma. So Carter he's kind of still raw. And after 2 years in the league, this is his second year in the league now, he's going to have to really up his game in year three to stay on a roster if he does stay on this year. But he's a guy that maybe he needs a second chance elsewhere, get a chance to grow a little bit more, get more reps. If he can do that, I think he's an interesting guy to keep an eye on. Let's finish this up with guys that with just a little bit of talk about the college game. And I think I'm just going to limit this to really one player right now. One player, the player that's most impressed me, and I've watched, you know, I've watched over 50 players thus far for the 2019 NFL draft. And I've watched multiple games for a lot of these guys. I don't have a definitive look at them at this stage because, you know, I'm very methodical about how I watch talent. Everything's graded with key process indicators. But the most impressive player to me thus far that stood out is by just a little bit is probably David Montgomery, the Iowa State running back at 5'11", 219. He's not extremely fast, but he's extraordinarily quick. He's got terrific balance. He's kind of like a mesh of players that you think about when you watch running backs. He's got that mix of what Doug Martin brings to the table in terms of that low center of gravity and that cutting ability, but also like Maurice Jones-Drew. He's like got even better feet than Martin. And I think Maurice Jones-Drew had great footwork and balance, and he was really powerful. And I wouldn't be surprised if Montgomery isn't anywhere remotely near 5'11". I would be willing to make a minor bet probably that David Montgomery is probably 5'8 or 5'9 at best. But he's a big back in a short frame. And watching him be able to adjust his feet to be able to create space, to bounce off hits, to spin, he's someone that I think he can play gap plays. He can play inside zone plays. He's someone that, you know, in this past draft class, he would have gotten dinged again for probably not having top speed. But I don't think it's that Samaje Perine kind of lack of speed and lack of burst. And I'm still kind of interested to see how Perine's going to do here, but it's not a comforting thing when you see, you know, Perine, you know, he has one good decent run this preseason, and then, you know, he gets a sprained ankle and they're bringing in another player, and you wonder if they're bringing another player because he sprained an ankle and they're being cautious, or whether it's they've just looked at this depth chart and decided that Perine and Kelly aren't going to cut it for them. But Montgomery, I think, is got a, you know, enough change of direction, speed, and burst that he's going to be a worthwhile NFL starter in the league when he gets there. So that's kind of an all-around grab bag of information this week at the RSPcast. I appreciate you guys listening. And, you know, again, please rate and review. And I look forward to, providing you guys more information down the line this season. And thanks again for listening. You can check out more RSP casts with guests and also solo efforts on iTunes, on Google Play, as well as Stitcher and Blueberry. And you can check out my site, www.mattwaldmanrsp.com. And of course, the RSP Film Room, Matt Waldman's RSP Film Room on YouTube. Thanks again.